It is 4 o'clock on the East Coast, 1 o'clock in the Pacific, and we are live. Coming to you here from Studio Me in Pittsburgh, PA, this is the Burn Pit Podcast, and I'm your host, Scott Benjamin Sieverts. To my right, as always, Matty Wack. What's up, brother?
What's going on, brother?
Best day of the week, Monday, 4 o'clock.
Yes, sir.
Spreely TV, you're watching us on. Spreely is a free speech network. It stands for Speak Freely. You can find Spreely on Roku, Apple TV, and Fire Stick. You can download it. It costs you nothing. It's absolutely free. You can find a lot of great programs on there, documentaries. You can say whatever you like. We have guests on this show that are banned on multiple platforms, and Spreely allows us the opportunity to sit down and have conversations with intelligent minds that you're not going to see on the mainstream. You can go to Spreely Social. That's Spreely.com. You can sign up for Spreely Social, and you can go on there and say whatever you like. You can also check out the Spreely Marketplace, a.k.a. America's Cost Club. There's two sponsors on there are Century H2O. It is a German filtration
water company
that's located out of Arizona. You can use the code BURNPIT, B-E-R-M-P-I-T, for 15% off. Also, you can go to Genesis Gold Group. It's the website they put up for us is burnpitgold.com, and back your gold or back your IRA 401k with physical gold and silver. That being said, we're going to get right into things. Our guest last week is the publisher of Culture Wars Magazine. He's Dr. E. Michael Jones. Dr. E. Michael Jones, how are you, sir?
Good. Good to be here.
Thank you again, sir, for your time and knowledge. We really enjoyed last week so much. It was just such an honor and a pleasure to have you on. But we're going to get right into things here today because we want to soak up as much time with your mind as we can. Yeah. Matt, if you want to start off with the first question.
Yeah, well, so Dr. Jones, obviously you know what happened Saturday night into Sunday morning over in the Middle East, over in the Jewish supremacist state of Israel and Iran. So I'd like to get your thoughts on what you think about the events that transpired that night with the
Iranian drones.
Yeah, the drones with Iran and the Iron Dome missiles that we pay for as Americans countering them. So go ahead, give me your take on that event, sir.
Yeah, this began the first of this month when the Israelis attacked a consulate in Syria. Protected under international law, killed a number of generals, important figures. And so the Iranians said, this has gone too far. We have to retaliate. Now, this was a closely coordinated retaliation between the United States and the Iranians. And what we saw on the news is not an accurate presentation. So first we get the news. They're coming in. We see all these little dots on the screen. And then the morning news comes on and they say 99% of all the Iranian drones were shot down. Okay, that's not true. That's not true. So, but the issue is not the number. The issue is what really happened. So with the coordination between the United States and Iran, Iran launches a squad of Shahid drones. These are the slowest and noisiest drones that they have in their arsenal, and they're launching them from, what is it, like 800 miles away, something like that. And so they're just chugging along toward Israel. The Israelis lock into them, and they start firing. It's like a shooting gallery, shooting down these Shahid drones. They shot a lot of them down. What they didn't understand is that this is the first step of a multi-phase kind of strategy on the part of the Iranians. What the Iranians learned from Russia during the war in the Ukraine is you want to lure the people into firing on your targets. Now, these are drones. You're not going to lose any pilots here. They are relatively inexpensive. Let's say a top end, what, $50,000, something like that. And yeah, they are, Israelis are using high price, high tech response to this, like Patriot missiles, which cost about 10 to 20 times what the drone cost. So if you have a swarm of drones and you take out, let's say, 100 Patriot missiles, that's significant. Simply economically, it's significant because you're on the winning end of an economic equation. So that's the first phase. And then there's a second phase, and these are missiles, and the same thing happens then. And then what they didn't talk about was the third phase, which was the hypersonic missiles, which got through.
Yep.
So that's the whole point of this thing. The one place where they did get through was that base, the Israeli base in the Negev, which is the base which launched the attack on the consulate that killed the Iranians in the first place. So the Iran has taken a principled action here. Okay, they first announced it, said, because the United Nations did not condemn this, Iran is forced to act in its own defense, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to retaliate because this will show the Israelis that they cannot attack us with impunity.
That's right. Now, Israel has responded. Their military chief confirms Israel will respond to Iranian attack. The Israeli military chief, Lieutenant General Herzi Halevi, said the drone and missile attack conducted by Iran over the weekend will be met with a response from Israel, but did not provide details. In your professional opinion, Doctor, what do you think Israel's response will be to this?
Well, first of all, they're leaving out the fact that Joe Biden called Netanyahu up on the phone after this, and he said, take it as a win. That's what he said. Okay, so you guys, you go with the story that you shot down 99% of the drones. Go with the story that Israel is militarily invincible still to this day, and just leave it at that, and don't do anything else. Because now I'm speculating here, because the United States has reached the end of its rope with you. You are dragging us into one conflict after another. We are losing whatever shred of moral credibility that we had before by constantly vetoing ceasefire resolutions in the United Nations. Don't do anything else. And if you do, we'll simply cut off the supply of your weapons. Now, that's all speculation. The last part of it is all speculation on my part, because that's the only thing they have to say. That's what the Americans have to do every time the Israeli mad dog goes running around biting people. They have to say, basically, we're not going to supply. Now, the fact that they used up all of those missiles to shoot down, $25,000 drones means that they need to replace them. And there's only one place that can replace them, and so the United States now has the upper hand.
And do you think the United States will replace them if they already have, and they gave them $14 billion just in that last
aid package?
Bill.
$65 billion went to Ukraine, $14 billion went to Israel, and $9 billion went to Taiwan.
And I believe the UK supplies as well with different missiles or funding, if I'm not mistaken. So do you think we're going to keep giving them more weapons, even if it's not being publicized that we are doing so?
I think that eventually the patience will run out. I think that the Biden is controlled by the Biden minion. It's 457 Jews who are running the Biden administration. So the problem is, whenever you're in a conflict, it's always two groups of Jews who are fighting each other. And so you have to rely on one group of Jews to kind of control the other group of Jews. And I assume that these Jews in the White House are not as bad as Ben Gavir and the lunatic Zionist racists that are pressuring Netanyahu. So I think they're going to have to capitulate. I mean, I think Israel is going to have to come around, because the Jews in the Biden administration don't want it to happen anymore.
Well, let me give you a hypothetical, because the election's in 7 months?
November.
Let's just say, I don't know if you looked at Donald Trump's tweets that he tweeted the other night. I'm not sure if you saw those, but I'll just read them real quick. Iran just killed an American. This will not stand. Joe Biden must retaliate now. Another one is American supports Israel. Another one is, unlike Biden, I would defend Israel from day one of my my presidency. Another one is Congress must pass unlimited aid to Israel to stop Iran.
Unlimited aid.
Yeah. that being said, let's just say Zion Don gets elected again, the guy who moved the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem and has a Jewish son-in-law, Kushner. Regardless, he goes over there, puts a little hat on, touches the wall like almost everybody else. Does he now support Israel and give them missiles when Biden leaves, if hypothetically he gets elected?
That's a pretty hypothetical question. It's assuming that we're all going to be alive when he gets elected. all I can say at this point is that every time he says this, he loses votes. Now, you can only afford to lose so many votes. And this is precisely the problem. I voted for Donald Trump. I voted for him the first time around because he gave this speech that was an America First speech. That's what I thought. So I thought, oh, great, this is America First. This is what I believe in. And then as soon as he gets into office, it turns out it's Israel First, after all. He's only gone further down that road. I don't know who's advising him, but you're losing votes. I think he feels that he's got to be constantly to the right of Biden, which doesn't make any sense on Israel, because that's not America. That's that foreign country that drains all of our resources. So he's shooting himself in the foot by doing this. I saw a tweet, I don't know whether it's true or not, where he said the death penalty for anti-Zionism. Has he gone that crazy?
Well, he passed. He passed. Go ahead.
All right. Now let me cut to the real threat right now. Okay, and this is in May. Debbie Lipstadt organized this statement, a comprehensive plan to fight anti-Semitism. The most comprehensive plan to fight anti-Semitism in the history of the United States. And they propose it, comes out of Congress, and the first thing you read when you're reading that document is, this does not have the rule of law. It does not affect any law in the federal, state, or whatever local government. Now, these same people have come back, and the ADL is proposing an anti-Semitism bill that will have the rule of law. That's basically that whole thing that Debbie Lipstadt did, now being endorsed by the ADL, and now putting it in front of Congress. This makes me nervous, to be honest with you, given the fact that IPAC is in total control of America's Congress. Mm-hmm. What are they going to do? The Jew always doubles down. So in the face of universal criticism about the genocidal behavior of Israel, they're not going to say, well, maybe we shouldn't do this. No, they're going to say, we'll make it a criminal offense in the United States if you criticize Israel. That's where we're headed right now. And I don't see anyone in Congress who's going to stand up and oppose it.
Oh, I agree with you. What do you think, Scott? Do you think it'll get passed if it came to Congress?
Yeah, we just follow the money. When you follow the money and you see these groups like AIPAC, I find it personally hard to believe that they're not going to continue funding Israel or continue to, replenish their military supplies, whether it be rockets, missiles, whatever the case may be. I just look at where the money is coming from to these politicians. And like Dr. Jones said, 80% of the Biden administration is either Jewish, they're dual citizens of Israel. That's an alarming number, 80%. They're only, 2% of the population?
Well, yes.
And they make up 80% of the current administration. That to me is crazy, because if it was...
China.
80% of the Biden administration was China, people would have a lot of questions here. And to quote Teddy Roosevelt said, there can be no 50-50 alliance here in this country. You're either 100% American or you're not. And that's what it's got to be. Here's a thought, Dr. Jones. How am I, a normal guy, let's say I'm not really invested into the news, but I see what's going on. How am I supposed to believe that on October 7th, a bunch of people on hang gliders were able to make it through the IDF's defense, but these drones were shot down immediately, allegedly 99% of the drones. How are we supposed to believe October 7th was legitimate when we're talking about guys on hang gliders coming across their borders? But how is that possible?
You're saying it's a false flag operation. I've heard that argument before. I think there's evidence for that. But it may have gotten out of control. I don't know. We can speculate all we want. In the absence of some type of internal evidence, we'll just have to go on the question of who cui bono, who benefited. And it seems to me that Israel has benefited more than Gaza on this regard.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now, we've done some speculating here, obviously. What's going to happen here if this happens or this happens? It's a chess game that we're trying to anticipate things. What do you think here is the end game of all this? Where do you think this road goes, and how far is it going to go? Or is it going to get to the point, again, this is all speculation, is it going to get to the point where the United States offers military aid in the form of troops
against Iran,
Iran, or is the Arab world finally going to turn and go enough's enough and move this state out of there and say they got to go? This is enough's enough.
And if that happens, what does Russia do, and what maybe China does? I mean, what do you think in the grand scheme of things, Dr. Jones? How would you see this play out to the best of your abilities if you were to sort of, have your crystal ball in front of you, so to speak?
I think that the United States backed down, and I think that they're going to have Israel back down. They have consistently backed down. There was a moment where Donald Trump was ready to something happened. The American bases were now being targeted. Something happened, and it was America's chance to respond. No, America had responded, and now it was Iran's chance to respond. And so I remember I was on Press TV, the Iranian TV broadcasting, and I said, look, attack Israel. Don't attack us. We're the American people don't want this. And so the attack came in. The Iranians attacked an American base, and the Americans let them do it. And I think people might have died, but it was a sitting duck. Nobody, they didn't defend it, and they just let it happen. I think that's what's going to happen here. I think that's the scenario. Nobody wants this war to escalate. The United States, if you're talking to military people, you're talking to a different group of people, even though the generals, once you reach the general level, you're pretty much a politician. But when you get below that level and you get honest in intel from these people, they would have to say, we are not in a position to fight this war. We have never been in a position to fight a war with Iran. Never. There have been 20 years where Netanyahu has been trying to get the United States to fight that battle. And after Iraq, it became clear if that's a debacle, if that's a morass, you can tell what Iran's going to be. We're not going to do it. And now you've got the situation that was before the Ukraine. Now you've got a situation where you simply have an ammo problem. You've got a shortage of ammunition across the board, across NATO, across the United States, of these big, high-ticket, high-priced weapons that the military-industrial complex loves because they make a lot of money off them. But they are not adequate to the asymmetrical warfare that is being fought. I've already mentioned the fact that if you send 10 drones in and you take out 10 Patriot missiles, you won. You won that battle. It came down into the Ukraine of artillery shells. It's basically when you got a long slog like that, it's who can produce more artillery shells? And the United States has been outproduced. All of NATO has been outproduced by Russia. And Russia is grinding its way to a victory there. They've just announced that the only deal that's on the table right now is unconditional surrender.
Wow.
Ukraine's they can surrender unconditionally or the war continues. Now, how... You cannot lose that war in the Ukraine and then launch simultaneously a war against Iran. You cannot do that. It's physically, logistically impossible, especially when you add in the fact that we are over-invested in military hardware that is obsolete. The aircraft carrier, is obsolete when it comes to hypersonic missiles. The tank is obsolete when you have drones and satellites that cover the entire battlefield. These are the two main weapons that the United States has been invested in, and they're not working. They're not working. So no one, I think that what we're going to see here is a gradual de-escalation in spite of the fact that the Jews never have a reverse gear on their car. I think they're going to have to be forced into this by simply the reality of the situation.
So let me ask you then, because you talked about the nationwide anti-Semitism bill being introduced or possibly even passing in the near future. You now have Florida with anti-Semitism bills. You have Texas governor with an anti-Semitism executive order. You now have South Dakota's governor, Kristi Noem, anti-Semitism bill and definition. You have Georgia governor that signed it, in February or January of this year, an anti-Semitism bill. You have other states, 29, I believe, other states that have hate speech laws, to which ipso facto turn right into anti-Semitism. They're tied right directly into it. So that being said, if they pass this nationwide one, are they going to start enforcing it the way they enforce it in Canada and in Europe, where I believe there's over 15,000 people in jail right now just for questioning the 6 Guerrillion number and other statistical facts about the Holocaust? Do you think that will happen here? And if so, do you think law enforcement agents on the federal, state, county, and local levels will be enforcing it to at least a fairly high capacity?
So the answer is, first of all, it's a completely different situation in Germany. If you want to, I lived in Germany. I taught there. I speak the language. I've done a lot of research onto Germany. And if you want my analysis, read my book, The Holocaust Narrative, because that was created to basically subjugate the mind of the German people. That is the basis of all of those laws, and it's a different situation than here in the United States. It's a different situation. Now, I've talked to people. I get a call from a guy. This guy's an FBI agent. So I said, okay, you want to interrogate me? He says, no, I'd like to have you out for lunch. So I said, okay, we'll go out to lunch. And then I said, well, how'd you find out about me? He said, well, we were taking a course in Washington, and this professor started saying stuff that was really interesting. And so we went up to him afterwards and said, where can we learn more about this? And so the guy looks around, and he pulls down the shade and makes sure no one's listening. He said, read the books of E. Michael Jones. So there's a group of people in the FBI who have a reading group who are reading my books. And so the guy comes out to lunch and he says, look, we got a problem here. How can you tell what's intel, what's the truth, true intel, and what's propaganda? Because you always have some Jewish group coming in and telling us, you go beat up these people instead of enforcing the law. Now, that type of consciousness is not going to go away if they pass a law. And so what we've had here is the run-up of years. First of all, we have a run-up of centuries of Americans understanding that they have the freedom of speech, and they have the First Amendment, which they don't have in Canada, and they do not have in Germany either. So we have this encoded in law, and then you've got the fact that we've been acting on it. What we're doing right now is exercising our free speech as Americans, because we are talking about the most important issues facing us right now in a way that the mainstream media does not. And so the question is, so you got that, and you got the other side of the coin, which is basically every single legislator in every single Congress, whether national or local, has been paid off by IPAC, been bought by IPAC. And so they're in a situation where I can't do anything. They'll run a candidate against me. They'll show those pictures of me at the strip club, drunk, stuffing the bills into that lady's panties. They'll pull off, this is the way they do this. The Epstein tapes will come out. Yep. And so basically what you have is a political class has been totally compromised, either by money or by blackmail. And so they have to pass it, and then you've got this impasse. Well, what are we going to do now? Well, I don't know. I don't think they're going to enforce it. I think the best example would be COVID. Now, I don't know where you were, but I mean, it depended a lot on where you were, how COVID got enforced. And Michigan is a classic example of that, where the sheriffs in certain counties simply didn't enforce it. Some counties, like Gretchen Whitmer and the Jewish lesbian who's the attorney general, they went after a barber in Owosso, you know, and made his life miserable. But the sheriff, I forget where county, I think it was near Hillsdale. Nobody did anything there. So I think this will be the situation. You got a political class that says, yes, we had to do it, but don't enforce it. That's exactly what happened the first time around. Okay, this is ridiculous shit. It's not going to pass any constitutional review, but they got me blackmailed. They gave me $1 million, so I'm going to vote for it, but don't enforce it. I think that's tacitly what was going to happen. I think if you took someone like Merrick Garland out as attorney general and put in an American as opposed to somebody who has relatives who died in the Holocaust, I think you would be reinforced by that group of people that I just told you about. There are people there who don't agree, FBI agents who don't agree with the way the place is being run. And I think we're reaching a crisis point now where it's do or die. It's do or die. And so when you have the immovable force and the irresistible force and the unmovable object, you come up with some type of compromise where the law gets passed and it doesn't get enforced. So specifically, what are they going to do in South Dakota? There are 357 Jews in South Dakota. Do you have listeners in South Dakota? Are we going to go to jail because somebody's listening to this in South Dakota? Is Kristi Noem going to send the Mounties after us? After Florida passed the bill, I gave a speech in Sarasota that would, I guess, technically would land me in jail. Nothing happened. I did my weekly podcast, said things that I normally say from a hotel room in Florida. What does this mean exactly? It will mean selective prosecution. Because Debbie Lipstadt will demand something, and so somebody, they'll go after somebody, and this will supposedly be a lesson to all of you. You'll be next, or something like that. And I think this is the problem here. If you use the law can overturn it. And so the law is basically going to go to the Supreme Court, and they'll overturn it because it's not constitutional. This was the genius, the evil genius of people like Dershowitz, Alan Dershowitz. I don't know whether you saw this recent video. He says, well, I get attacked all the time for being Jewish. So we'll forget about the Lolita Express, okay? It's all because you're Jewish, right, Alan? Okay.
I still had all my underwear.
It was an old lady and I kept my underwear on. So shut up and you're an anti-Semite for bringing it up. So anyway, Alan says, now this is what I would do. I would get a group of 100 lawyers together and we'd go after these anti-Semites and we'd take their car away from them and they'd be sleeping on the sidewalk. Now that's significant because that is the way this whole thing is going. You have private entities like the ADL that basically can wage lawfare against you. Donald Trump is one of the main victims of lawfare. It's these lawsuits that are private lawsuits that will bankrupt you. So this is what happened after Charlottesville. You had this, I'm gonna say, this is how she describes herself. She's a chubby lesbian kike. And that's the way she described herself, so that if you say it on the internet, you'll get banned for hate speech.
But she called herself that.
Yeah, she called herself that. So anyway, she's got a big funding operation and they go after these poor schmucks at Charlottesville and they just engage them in lawfare and bankrupt them. That's the way it has evolved. That's more pernicious than this legal stuff because if it's the government going after you, you've got more protection than if Alan Dershowitz goes after you.
Is there another group or a class of people that you can't criticize like this? They're above reproof. They're above correction. They're above criticism. Is there another group like this? I feel like there's not any other group that's above this.
No, of course not. Of course not. And that's the whole point. So if they're going to frame it as anti-Semitism, we're going to frame it as, well, are you above criticism? Is there some group in America that is above criticism? Is there some group, if they don't like what you say, they will destroy your life? Well, no. That's why this is the most important issue facing us right now. We cannot back down on this issue. This is America. It's at stake here. The rule of law is at stake here.
Yeah, I'm going to slightly disagree with you. I believe it will be enforced because you brought up COVID. However, to your point, you are correct in a lot of different ways when it comes to the enforcement of COVID. However, these mandates and orders and shutdowns were done by governors, and people shut down and they obeyed these orders. Whether it was after they were shut down, they had to put up the stupid glass 6 feet away, 25% occupancy. And I'm just giving you state of Pennsylvania because that's where we're at. So I'm going to go off of that. What happened was the Liquor Control Board of Pennsylvania, also known as the PALCB,
they basically operate as like the state police. They're armed. The liquor control enforcement, they can come into your bar, they can shut you down, they have firearms, they're not police, but they arm them.
Well, the state police actually went with them, actually. Yeah. And they did shut businesses down that were open, and they did put shutdown notices. County health departments put shutdown notices on places that weren't following, and also places were shut down, like bars and restaurants, who violated any of these orders that even when they were allowed to be open didn't follow. So my point is this, Dr. Jones, people were prosecuted, they were fined, they were ordered to shut down by obviously law enforcement.
Lost their liquor licenses.
Here's my point. You will have people in the rural areas who don't give a shit. However, you have them in the suburban areas and urban areas, the metropolitan areas, that it will be enforced. And just like red flag laws are 100% unconstitutional, Dr. Jones, but they have been in effect for over 10 years now, and there's more red flag law states than ever before.
18, 19 states.
Including Republican states like DeSantis and Indiana. My point is, it wasn't shot down, and they have already confiscated firearms illegally, complete violation of Article 1 of the 14th Amendment, violation of the Second Amendment, violation of Fifth Amendment, violation of Fourth Amendment. They are being done. So my point is this. I believe in a lot of areas they will be enforced.
And to Dr. Jones' point with the Alan Dershowitz comment, I believe they're going to make examples out of people in certain areas.
Examples like Nick Fuentes, Lucas Gage. They already came to Lucas Gage's house and with like five police officers to kind of scare him, Stu Peters. So I believe the scaring tactics have already been done, and I believe they will make examples out of high-profile individuals like you, Dr. Jones, Lucas Gage, Nick Fuentes. The list goes on. I believe
Candace Owens.
Candace Owens. Yeah, who knows? So I think it will be enforced to some capacity just because, just like it was enforced during COVID in certain areas to some capacity.
But we'll go back to you, Dr. Jones, in a second here. But you do see what happens with people that are bold and courageous. That's contagious. And you see Candace Owens now realizing and speaking up on certain things, noticing that, hey, why can't I criticize this group of people? Why are they trying to force their religion on me? Why are they doing this? So we have high-profile people that are asking questions, even Mr. Patrick Bet David. He started questioning things.
Tucker Carlson.
Right. You see all these things coming out here. So I do believe that people will become bold and courageous, but I think what we're looking at here is a fight down the line. It's a cultural war to your magazine, sir, Cultural Wars magazine, not to spin off that, but it is. It's a cultural war here that we're going to engage in. And I do believe, to your point, Doctor, that they will try and make examples out of people. I do think they will take these laws and they will say, look what we did to this person. Do you want to be next? Keep your mouth shut. Don't say anything. And that's how, be a good little boy and little girl. And that's how it's going to be. I see that coming down the line. Dr. Jones, we'll
yield back to you.
We'll yield back to you. Sorry.
Okay, so in order to do this, you have to have a crisis, like a calamity, like something really bad. Like two planes just flew into the World Trade Center. And this is the end of the world as we know it. And you better pass this bill. It's called the Patriot Act. It's 7,000 pages long. We wrote it up five years ago. And you got to sign it right now because we're in a panic mode. Well, that's what COVID was. I mean, we're all going to die. So I've just got on an airplane not too long ago. And you walk up the gangway to get on the airplane. And there's a sign there, please stand 6 feet apart. And then you get on the airplane, and you're 6 inches from the guy next to you. And apparently you can't catch this disease when you're 6 inches apart. But this is crazy. And I think we were all... So the whole point of shock therapy, this is, what is it, Naomi Klein's book. It's a good book. Shock therapy, you have to have that shock that hits you, the shock wave that hits you. And then you're stunned, and you're kind of staggering around like, what happened? What happened? If you don't have that, it's not going to work. And the other thing that happens is it wears off. So eventually you realize, well, gosh, I was 5 feet away from that guy and I didn't die. So maybe it's not as bad as they're saying. And on top of that, maybe now we realize that the people who got the shot are in a worse position than we are who didn't get the shot. And so I don't think they can do it a second time around. And I'm thinking this is the same type of trajectory that's going to happen now. So the Jews are going to have to whip everybody up into a frenzy, like a kind of moral panic, that this is the biggest threat to the world as we know it. And they do this all the time. The IPAC is famous for doing this at their conventions. And then it blows away and it's gone. None of this stuff can last. And I'm saying, I stand by what I said. If I had to choose between having Roberta Kaplan, the chubby lesbian kike, come after me, or Alan Dershowitz come after me, or any of these people, I'd prefer to have the government come after me, if you want my honest opinion, because at least I know I'm working according to the rule of law there. And the law is on my side, because we have the First Amendment. The whole problem with the internet is that the law did not get applied to the internet. That was, in a sense, this cultural shock that I'm talking about. Like, what's this thing called the internet? Oh, what's hate speech? Wait a minute, hate speech. Hate speech needs to be applied. Well, wait a minute, what's hate speech? What does that mean? All this type of stuff, you're in a kind of shock. Data shock because it's new and you don't understand the implications of it. But over a period of time, you start to regain your composure and then you start to see the implications of it and you realize, no, that's crazy. We're not going to go along with that. I think that's what's going to happen. And I don't think at this point, I can't think of a worse time for the Jews to organize some type of moral panic against anti-Semitism. This is the worst time in their history to do this because everybody knows what's happening in Gaza. Everybody knows that everything that comes out of the Israeli ministry is a lie, you know, about beheading babies and this type of stuff. And now they're going to try and gain sympathy of the American people. I don't think it's going to happen. The Congress can pass all the laws they want. But yeah, getting people to first of all, to enforce it, and then getting people to accept the enforcement, I don't think it's going to happen.
Now, let me get your opinion on this, because basically I'm asking you for your
expertise,
your analysis on a statistic. Do you think that the conservative Republican base in this country, which is overwhelmingly in support of Donald Trump, by the way, do you believe that they are on board with the whole notion that anti-Semitism is on the rise and we need to stop it and we support Israel? Do you? Because I believe the overwhelming amount of Republicans and conservatives in this country overwhelmingly support a foreign nation. And that being said, this is why they still overwhelmingly support Donald Trump.
And we talked about this. We talked about this last week with the evangelicals. A good portion of the Republican base is evangelical Christians, and they bought into that those verses. And we repeat this time and time again here on the podcast when we ask the question about God's chosen people, Israel's our greatest ally, and Christians, of course, it's been ingrained in them that those who bless my people, I will bless; those who curse my people, I will curse. And Israel, to a lot of evangelicals, Israel, the support for Israel is one of the top issues there for the evangelicals.
Yeah, so that's what I think. What is your opinion? Do you think that the overwhelming majority of the conservative Republican base are in support of Israel?
Okay, it depends on how you frame the issue. And the classic example of framing the issue was when Donald Trump came to South Bend, Indiana, the first time around. So they had the advance man come out. Okay, now you look around, and these are the salt of the earth, Indiana. Any place like 10 miles south of South Bend, it's Christian Zionism all the way down. Like Mike Pence is an example of that. He was born a Catholic, baptized a Catholic, and then when he saw, got in political ambition, he became a Christian Zionist. So that's who those people are. So Trump arrives in town. It's the biggest group of people to assemble in South Bend ever for a political operation. So it's packed. The big hall is packed. And the advance man comes out and he says, "What about that girl that got raped by an immigrant in San Francisco?" And nobody says anything. And then he goes down the list of all this type of stuff. And then finally he says, "What about Carrier Air Conditioning moving its plant to Mexico?" And everybody erupts. Now, these are all Christian Zionists, but they're also workers. And this is the issue that's bothering the people in Indiana. So it depends on how you frame the issue. You know, if you let's take it the other side. Indiana is pro-life and it's pro-Israel. Well, how are you going to deal with that?
Yeah.
Well, maybe the fact you could talk about the Indiana Court of Appeals that just gave Jews a religious exemption for the abortion law. Let's talk about that. All my Christian Zionist friends out there. Did you know that abortion is a fundamental Jewish value? 400 Jewish organizations have talked about. So let's talk about that. I did this in Oklahoma. One of these guys, they go to these evangelical churches on the Red River Valley, is raised 100% pro-life, 100% pro-Zionist. And I said, "Did you know abortion is a fundamental Jewish value?" And he looked at me and he said, "After I heard you say that, my whole world fell apart."
Wow.
This is the type of discussion that we have to have, because we have total incoherence no matter where you look. So if you're on the left, you're against F-16s killing babies in Gaza, but you're pro-abortion. And if you're on the right, you're anti-abortion, but you're pro F-16s killing babies in Gaza. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's a wild dynamic there.
We have to have this discussion in order to come up with a coherent policy that will unite the country against the big issue, which is Jewish control of our culture and our politics.
How long would you say there was Jewish control over our culture, our government, our media in mass? Do you think it was World War I, World War II, or would you say it was the stranglehold came in the 60s and 70s?
I actually watched a podcast you did, Doctor, recently, and you talked about the Jewish orchestrating the Cultural Revolution in the 1960s. It was an amazing podcast and what you talked about there. But Matt's question, how long do you think this has been going on?
Well, okay, so they made their attempt, and the Jews have always controlled Hollywood. There's never been a question. They created it, they controlled it. And by the 1920s, they were pushing the envelope, pushing nudity in films, blasphemy, all this type of stuff. Protestants didn't like it. They tried to bring the Will Hayes involved. He failed, and then the Catholics basically took the stepped up to the plate and threatened a boycott of Hollywood films at a time when the Jews were vulnerable because they had borrowed all this money to finance talking pictures. And the Jews, Philadelphia boycott, Harry Warner's losing $100,000 a week in Philadelphia alone. That's $100,000 of real money, 1933 money.
Wow.
And so the Jews back down and they accept the production code. So great. This is good because you have to keep the Jews under control because they can't control themselves. So that lasts for 31 years, and the crucial turning point came in 1965 when the Jews broke the production code. Now the floodgates are open for pornography. Pornography is a Jewish sacrament like abortion, sodomy, and Zionism. And once they had broke the control of the Catholic Church, they took over and they reached the point. So I would say that the turning point came in 65.
And do you see it ending soon, or do you see no end in sight as long as they control the money supply, or not just through bribery, but through blackmail?
I think that the American empire is going to collapse. The Jews are going to destroy the American empire. The Jews are going to destroy the best deal they ever had in human history. Now, why they would want to do that is deep theological reason. Goes back to the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, the attack on Logos, and so on and so forth. But that's what they're doing. And this is, I think, God's plan. God's plan is that we can't go on. We can't allow these people to have any form of control. We gave you the chance to go peacefully. There's still a chance to go peacefully. But if you don't go peacefully, you're going to go in a way that you don't like, because I think your time is up. I think the time is up. And that's God's plan. That's not our plan.
Dr. Jones, thank you for your insight there. We got about 10 minutes left here on the show here. You're watching us live on Spreely TV. Again, you can find Spreely on Roku, Apple TV, and Fire Stick. Now, Dr. Jones, what we like to do here from time to time in the last 10 minutes, we do either a multiple choice.
We play a game. We do a multiple choice game.
Or we do a word association game. And I have a few. We have a word association game where I just say a name. You know, we've had different names from Biden's cabinet on before. You know, Anthony Blinken. The first thing that comes to mind, it doesn't have to be one word. You can give a long-winded reply. Matt often does. So here's a few names that I've kind of cherry-picked watching a lot of your content, and just to get a take on some of these names here on the Word Association game, the Burn Pit Podcast on Spreely TV. The first name I have is Martin Luther.
Martin Luther. Okay. Martin Luther... was a Catholic priest who could not control his passions, any of them, anger, gluttony, had a problem with that. But the biggest problem he had was lust. And so at a certain point, he had to stop the people who were talking about him. So he married a nun called Katharina von Bora. This is what they were doing at that time. They were breaking into convents and dragging the women out and offering to the Bishop of Mainz, people like that. And that's a bad thing to do because he broke his vow of celibacy. She broke her vow of celibacy. But something worse happened, and that was basically trying to make a theological virtue out of the fact that he couldn't control his passions. And that was known as De Servo Arbitrio on the enslaved will, which came out shortly after his marriage. And that had a devastating effect on the moral climate of the West to this day. I'm doing a book on American identity right now. American identity, Samuel Huntington said it, it's Anglo-Protestant. That's what it is. The Puritans were the main vector of that Anglo-Protestantism, and they were the main group of people who suffered from this. It was Calvinist theology by that point, based on Luther's bad habits. I just read Nathaniel Hawthorne's Scarlet Letter. This man, I did my dissertation on it. It's not the first time I read. I was struck by this man's genius, what a genius this man was, because he cut to the heart of the whole problem at the beginning, the Puritans, which is basically the minister who is saved. He's one of the visible elect on earth, and he commits adultery. And how do you reconcile these two things? This is the legacy of Martin Luther, and I think we're still working on it today. It's an important, it's a really important question. If you want my take in writing on Martin Luther, it's the last chapter of my book, Degenerate Moderns, where I go into the whole story of the Reformation in Germany.
Wow, that's really good. Where can they find that book?
Fidelitypress.org.
Perfect.
All my books are at fidelitypress.org. Read that book because that will give you the footnotes. I'm backing up everything there by sources, and you can read the story there.
What a brilliant man here. Matt?
Everything I know from Martin Luther is from Dr. E. Michael Jones, basically. But he had a good book or pamphlet he wrote about some group of people and their lies. I can't remember the name of the group of people, but next name.
He wrote two pamphlets on the Jews, and again, this is the person, especially the second pamphlet, it shows you the personality of Martin Luther. The anger comes out, and he violated the fundamental teaching of the Catholic Church on the Jews. The Church had worked out a position on the Jews. It's called Sicut Iudaeos Non. It's basically no one has the right to harm the Jew, but the Jew has no right to destroy your culture or corrupt your morals or ridicule your faith. And that was a modus vivendi that worked, and Luther violated it. You read the thing and you'll see the violence that is coming out of Luther. And I think it found this culmination in the 1930s.
Yeah.
I don't want to belabor that, but I think it had a big influence on German thought.
Yeah, that was excellent, Doctor. Next name, and you mentioned Calvinism. How about John Calvin?
Okay, John Calvin was a French jurist. We just published an article about basically the moral lives of all the reformers, and the big. So Luther is an open book. No, everybody knows what he did. He talked about it himself. Calvin is a completely different story. There's something, I think, really sinister about Calvin. So what he's trying to do, he took Lutheran theology, he was a lawyer, and created a legal system called the Institutes that had tremendous damaging effect to America. All you have to do is read that generation that I mentioned, Nathaniel Hawthorne, Ralph Waldo Emerson, the great writers of the middle and 19th century. The one thing that united him was hatred of Calvinism. That's what comes out in the Scarlet Letter. I think that there's a story that still needs to be told about what was Calvin's real issue. And I think that Christopher Marlowe, he was a contemporary of Shakespeare. He worked for Walsingham, so he was involved in military intelligence. He said that the question is, why did Calvin burn Servetus at the stake? The big issue, why did Servetus have to be burned at the stake? And Marlowe said it's because they were both homosexuals. Now that is really significant. That's really significant, especially in light of the basically effect that Calvin, much more so than Luther, had an incredibly formative influence on the Puritans in New England and an incredibly distorting effect on what happened there.
Yeah. Basically, all I know about him is with the Puritans with New England, and he wore a funny hat. Again, John Calvin is not my expertise.
Gotcha.
There.
Well, I have a name next that is your expertise, but I'm going to go to Dr. Jones first. It's probably the last name we're going to be able to get to. Our time today is running short here. And again, we thank Dr. Jones for his time and his knowledge and his expertise in a lot of these matters. He's such a joy and a pleasure to listen to.
Yes.
Please go and find it. You go to bitchute.com. You can find a lot of content on there with Dr. E. Michael Jones. Go to his website again for the
culturewars.com or is it Culture Wars magazine?
Culturewars.com or fidelitypress.org.
Yep. Yes, sir. All right. Last name of the day here is a gentleman by the name of Moses Mordecai Levi.
Now, wait a minute. I think you mean David Mordecai Levi.
No. Moses Mordecai Levy, Levy, also known as Karl Marx.
Karl Marx.
Oh, Karl Marx. Okay. Karl Marx. Karl Marx wrote a pamphlet called Zur Judenfrage on the Jewish question, and said that the Jewish religion was capitalism. I can't even say cap, worship of money, worship of money.
Yeah.
I think he was right. I cover Marxism in my book on economics called Barrow Metal, A History of Capitalism as the Conflict Between Labor and Usury. But I think in this regard, he had to come up with an explanation, because that was the issue. This, after the revolution of 1848 in Europe, the issue was not the Ancien regime anymore. It was capitalism, and capitalism was perceived as Jewish at this point. And this was an early attempt on his part to deal with this problem. We got the same problem. Marx is good in that he was not willing to accept their explanation of their religion. And I don't think we should either. And I'm saying if you say that abortion is a fundamental Jewish value, you are not worshiping Yahweh. You are not worshiping the God of the Old Testament. You are worshiping Moloch, which the Jews did at the foot of Mount Sinai when Moses was getting the Ten Commandments. It's an old story with them. And I'm saying, if you worship Moloch, you have no right to control us, to control our government, to use the Israelis as a way of imposing genocide on people and undermining entire rule of law and civilization.
Yeah, I believe he was the first person to publicly advocate for genocide that I know of. And also, well, I think they took heed to his words whenever capitalist bankers of New York funded the Bolshevik Revolution and then implemented communism. I mean, if you think about it, communism is the illegitimate child of capitalism. I mean, would you agree with that, Dr. Jones?
I agree. And you're right that there are always two sides to this communism. It was that Balzac saw Heinrich Heine and James Rothschild walking down the street in Paris, and he said, voila tout l'esprit juif. This is the spirit, the Jewish spirit. It's a millionaire and a revolutionary. So it's Jacob Schiff and Trotsky, it's Heine and Rothschild. That's the way it goes.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, this has been a pleasure here today. Dr. E. Michael Jones, thank you for your time, sir.
Thanks again.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Great discussion. This is what we have to do now. The pressure is on. We cannot back away from our rights as Americans to free speech, because this is the only way we're going to solve this problem. We cannot capitulate to this Jewish pressure to shut up.
Well, Dr. Jones, this is the Spreely Network we are on, which stands for Speak Freely, and they have honored that so far.
They've had our back. But we got your back, Dr. Jones. Thank you for everything here today. If you'd like to hang on when we get off live, just so we can just
discuss a couple things with you after.
We're going to cut the live feed now. But again, thanks everybody for watching. Listen, see you next Monday, 4:00 p.m. every Monday and every Monday after that here on Spreely TV. This is the Burn Pit Podcast. We're out of here. See ya. Thank you for taking the time to watch us. If you like this episode and you'd like to watch another one, click here. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Thanks.